Oh no.
Oh, it's fine. I thought I erased it.
Come on, take a ride. We're here by your side. Sit down, shut up, and grab a drink. You're healing with the Disco Queens.
Hey, groovy people. I'm Alex.
And I'm Susanna. And welcome back to
Healing with the Disco Queens. If you are new here, welcome. If you're returning, welcome back. We have been friends for 10 years, and this is our podcast where we talk about the beauty and the struggles of life in your 20s. So we sit here and we reflect on our own experiences, and we give advice on what we know now to our past 20-year-old selves.
Yeah. This is the podcast you can turn to when you just need a break from the world, because it's hard out there. And tonight we're going to dig deep into why it's hard.
Why it's hard.
And why we're tired.
Tired.
Just take a nap right here.
Take a nap here.
And so, yeah, it's hard out there. So grab a snack, grab yourself a little drink, and sit down, shut up.
And let's get started.
Let's get started. We got things to say.
We got things to talk about. So each episode, we like to name after a 70s disco song inspired by some of our favorite disco queens. Mm-hmm. And so tonight, we named our episode In My Dreams, I Have a Plan from Money, Money, Money with ABBA.
Of course.
Of course. It's the ABBA show.
ABBA song, yeah.
I mean, eventually we're going to end up covering. There's a reason they made it into a Broadway play, okay?
I mean, literally. And, like, they wrote really good music. And so a lot of what we are talking about is reflected in the words. So, mm-hmm. I mean, sue us.
Yeah.
Don't sue us.
Please don't.
Please don't.
We have no money.
It's the song.
Literally. So.
Segue.
We have no money. Money, money, money. Yeah. And, you know, as we were listening to it, I was like, this is literally... I mean, you think of the trope of the starving artist.
So and here we are.
And here we are. No, but if you've been following us for a little bit, or if you're brand new, our lives revolve around art, the arts. So I am an art therapist, Susanna is a music therapist, and we have degrees abong galore of
in music, in art.
In art, in just what the arts are. And so, like, reading these lyrics, we're like, oh my gosh. So tonight we're going to be talking about what our art careers entailed, the struggles, what we learn from it, and just kind of our takes on why the arts are important, and yeah. Really the struggle is very real.
It's so real. Which brings us to our next point of why we have struggled. So tonight we, of course, have our drink. Don't forget our drink. We have to cheers it. Oh, so slightly, like. So tonight we have our espresso martinis, which is like such the 70s-esque martini. And the reason we chose that is because we've had the grind of our careers. So we've been grinding it out like all these years, probably like 6 years for me. And then like, yeah, 7 for you. It's just never-ending cycle, but it's coming to an end. Like a starting point, I should say, not like our college, our education is coming to a close.
Right.
And now we're starting. Yeah. For now, you never know. You learn every day, but we're starting this path. And so we've been grinding it out. And so that's why we had the espresso. And then of course, with that comes no sleep. Only espresso.
And yes. I definitely lived off coffee in your Keurig in college.
Yeah. Yeah.
Crying over projects.
Which we'll get into. But yeah, and then we don't have the beans tonight, but traditionally the espresso martini has 3 coffee beans that are displayed on top. I'm sure you've seen it in a bar. And those represent health, wealth, and happiness.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So
we learn every day.
Yeah, exactly. Health, wealth, and happiness. So that is like all about I feel like, what our careers are, what our passions are, and especially if you pursue something that is your passion, it'll bring you good mental health, physical health, emotional health, wealth, maybe.
And when we're and about happiness. To get in, yeah, we're about to get into this, but it doesn't necessarily mean there's not a struggle.
Exactly.
With love, exactly. There is pain sometimes.
Yes.
And
yes.
I think that's a good time to get into it.
Let's do it.
All right. So, as we get started, we're going to talk about kind of what our background is in the fine arts. If you've listened to our career episode, you already know a little bit, but this is really focusing on why did we choose a career in fine arts when there's so many other probably easier paths.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, I think you've already hit on it. I think it's driven by passion, driven by almost, I want to say family tradition, but you know, you were raised by people in the arts. I was raised by people in the arts. And so there was just already this underlying appreciation.
Yeah.
Of if you are an artist or you like to dabble in art or music or theater or dance, like you already just know the magic there.
Right. And I think it's important too, just like with that passion piece, like, if you have a talent like that, I think you should share it, you know? Like if you have a talent of public speaking, right? Not everybody does that. Like, obviously it's like one of the biggest fears or something like that. So, I mean, if you have like, here we are, but this no one's in front of us. Right. I was going to say, but yeah, like if you have that special talent or something, then use it.
Right.
Learn it, you know what I mean? Like learn from it, like what all you can do with it. So,
and I think that's, before we get into our background, let me just tangent already started off on a tangent.
I mean, yeah,
I think the fine arts gets a really bad rap in the sense of everything we do has to be profitable. We can't just be creative for the sake of being creative. And I think that's where we lose a lot of that passion. Maybe we lose that sense of self. Oh, I don't want to. I hear this all the time. I can't draw a stick figure. That's okay. I'm not here to judge you. I'm not here. And we're going to get into that a lot later in the episode. But let me revert back to why we started the path that we started. So for me, I really don't know. No.
For me, I'm just here. I don't.
No, but for me, I just distinctly remember I took my first art class in high school. Mm-hmm. Like my actual, I did art competitions all growing up. I had people in my life that were artists and they would sell their art. So I was introduced to fine art at such a young age. Not even just like art in general. I went to my first like Broadway show at TPAC.
Yeah.
When I was 6 years old, it was Cats. I almost broke our TV because I was like dancing around and I was like, I wanted to be Victoria the White Cat.
Yes, me too.
Yes, of course. Yes, of course, because who doesn't?
Right.
And so I remember seeing that and I was on the edge of my seat. I already knew what Phantom of the Opera was. So like just being introduced to this world of just creativity and fantasticism.
Expression like, and
yes.
Just, yeah.
So I started doing art really, really young, for just because I like to do it. I liked being creative. My grandmother was like, oh, you want a watercolor? Cool. And so she would create a safe space in her house so I could be messy. And
I love that.
Yeah. Like I was just,
I love that.
We were just allowed to make a mess. And I think,
not all people get that.
No. Well, we'll get there. We will get there.
I did not get that.
And so that just really fueled this passion for creating. And there were so many influences around. And so going to college, 18 years old, I said, I'm going to be an art major. And I picked my college based off of whether or not I could get a bachelor's versus a minor. That actually was a major decision. I was like, no, I want a bachelor's in fine arts in studio art. A bachelor of fine arts in studio art. And I don't know why. I don't know what just my bullheadedness at the time. I was like, this is what I'm going to do. So what I didn't know, and I think this is kind of what we're going to start out with, is how much... So there's a lot of criticism of the fine arts, and I think what people don't see is the criticism that goes into fine arts. Mm-hmm. So I went through my courses, and one of the hardest parts, one, we didn't have like tests. You finished projects.
Yeah.
I would have, gosh, I don't even know, anywhere between 5-6, that was my 3D design. So those, they were massive, to 15-20 pieces due by the end of the semester. And like, right. You think of that sounds easy, but in reality, like, you think of the time and effort that goes into that. I was pulling all-nighters.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I lived off your Keurig.
I was like, we lived together during that time. Well, like, during one of the times, and yeah, it was just like all the, just so much.
It was insane. And so Then what you would do is during midterms and finals, you would put your pieces up, done or not. You put your pieces up and you would say, hey, here's my inspiration. Here's kind of what my vision was. And you do a defense. We did that in every class. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of my teachers, I had a couple that you could like have a conversation, but most of the time after your defense, you were silent. And so then you had the teachers and you had the students critiquing your work. And that word critique sounds really negative. Mm-hmm. And I think at times it could be. I think also one of my biggest takeaways is I learned very quickly, one, how to take criticism.
Yeah.
I developed a rather thick-ish skin because sometimes people were not always as nice with their, they're like, okay. However, I will say this, and I don't know if this was your experience, but my professors were really good at developing constructive criticism.
Yeah.
Of like, you can't just sit there and be like, wow, that sucks.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, that's nothing. You're like, hey, like, I distinctly remember there was a piece. This was actually wasn't my piece. It was somebody else's piece that I would never give criticism. I was like, oh my gosh, like, it just, we were raised in a nice, polite household. Heaven forbid you talk about somebody else's work.
Right.
No. So right. I remember this day so vividly. And so the piece, the concept of the piece was the world with, and it, they had taken trash, and it was basically about like pollution and what's happening in the world and things like that. And I remember loving the concept. However, the execution was not quite, it got lost in translation, and that's part of art. That's part of the fine arts, is it's not just creation, it's the interpretation of it.
Yep.
And I remember looking at the girl and I was like, I have something. And I was like, you know, like, I really like your concept. I think for me, basically there was too much trash, so you lost the world, but it wasn't done in a strategic way where it looked like it was suffocating. It was just, it was to that point, it was distracting. And right. I said that, I was like, I just think for me, if you had taken a few of the pieces off or just used it in a different strategic manner, then it might have read in a different way or in a stronger way. Mm-hmm. And she got really upset. And I remember my professor, he was like, no, like, that was a good constructive criticism.
Right.
That's going to happen.
Yeah.
So I just remember that so vividly because I was like, okay, criticisms are going to happen.
Yep.
And I think for me, that was one of the biggest takeaways I took from being an art major. And also, equally, because we are 18, 19, 20, with mental health and anxiety out the wazoo. Mm-hmm. I think it's also that understanding of now in the fields that we're in. People are like, I can't draw a stick figure. And I'm like, it's okay. You don't have to. You don't have to. Valid. Like, it's okay. I totally understand why you're anxious. I did this.
Insane.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah. Right. So yeah, I look back at that time
in like an appreciative way. And also, like, I don't know, I feel like it really, in some ways, benefited me to like have a vision, execute it. I also remember, I don't know, I may cut this one out, but I also remember, did I ever tell you about my piece? This was my favorite piece. I don't have it anymore because it broke. It broke right before we moved in together. Or we might have already been living together.
I think I remember what you're talking about. And everywhere that you looked at it was like a different version.
Yes.
It was wild.
I love this piece so much. And I wouldn't have created it the way that I had created it if it wasn't for the feedback that I was getting. Because I did have a part of it finished by midterms. And there was feedback and there was a little bit of criticism and like there was some things being lost in translation. And so I tweaked it. So basically this piece, I had one figure and they were just supposed to be forms. They weren't necessarily any specific gender or just any, you know, there was no markers or specifiers or anything like that. And so one was kneeling with its arms out and the other was standing with its arm. So there, one arm was out and the other, they were touching. So one was walking, the other was knelt. And so if you looked at it one way, it looked like someone was proposing. Mm-hmm. And as you walked around, if you looked at it from a different angle, it looked like the other person was actually walking away and the person on their knee was begging. Mm-hmm. And I remember that so vividly. Because that was kind of the first time I really got art therapy. Mm-hmm. Not that we were doing art therapy. It was just the idea of art is good for you and you explore things. And that was very much my reality at that time of coming to terms with conflicting thoughts, what we thought was going to be. And I remember that piece. It broke. Probably good. I probably shouldn't have kept it.
Well, and since our listeners, I think you should go into depth just a little, since they know now.
In depth about, like, what it was?
Yeah.
Well, we talked about it a little bit, so it was
because the representation of it breaking is the time period.
Yes.
The universe is crazy.
Yes. Wow. So I finished this, so I had part of it finished by midterms. I went through this massive, just depressive spell. I mean, it was rough. I didn't go to class for 2 weeks.
Right, that was that.
Yeah. I didn't go to class for 2 weeks. I ended up finishing it. I ended up finishing all my projects. And actually, my professor was like, I was really surprised that you finished it. I was like, listen, me too.
I'll get there. I just need time.
Yes. And I love that professor. My grandmother actually passed that same semester.
Yeah.
In his, like, I got the call in his class.
I remember
and
that.
He was like, we will clean up your station. We'll make sure. Because I was working with clay. So right. You have to wrap it up or else.
Right.
Or else it dries out and then it breaks. And that was what was happening.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. So the concept of this, like I said, it was kind of this give and take of maybe our ideas of life. Of what it's supposed to be versus what we're actually feeling in the moment. And I made it very unspecific because, I mean, if I projected myself, was I the one walking in the way or was I the one begging? And so I had gone through a breakup, but now it was like in this weird kind of back and forth phase. There was other people now involved. Like I was talking to other people. This other person was talking to other people. But, like, also, we still had a lot of feelings for each other. Mm-hmm. There was just so many things collapsing on itself. Right. And so this piece was physically made as a response to all that. And I was like, I don't know what the heck I'm doing. But it just came out. And it actually broke twice. So the first time it broke, I had finished it. I was so excited. Within 30 seconds, I finished it. It took me 5 months to make this. Within 30 seconds it fell, and the one that was reaching, that was standing, and like it looked like it was either reaching for the ring or for,
or like walking away,
or walking away, the arms broke off. The arms broke off, and I was like, what in the world? I like
didn't cry, but also like I was brimming with tears because I just spent 5 months making this.
Yeah, you're
and
right.
Like it's also for
super glue.
It was also clay, and I mean it was also for a grade, and my professor's like, it's okay, like we're gonna figure it out. So then one arm stayed. It was the arm that was touching that broke. So this one was still walking. This one was still in the motion. And so then in the kiln, the other arm, not the other arm, but the second figure, one of their arms broke off because it broke off in the kiln. So now we have one-armed figures, which was even cooler. It was almost like those ancient ruins where, like, you know, you can see Athena and you can see her posture.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, so, like, it was really cool in the final critique where people were like, we can still see, even though we've known that, like, things are breaking off this left and right, we know what you're trying to do. Like, and it's still conveying that message.
Yeah.
That was, like, probably one of my strongest pieces that I ever made. So then, final critique comes. It looks great, despite all the breaking, and I go to take it home, and the door shuts on me, and it breaks in my hand. I mean, it cut my hands. It had cut, like, it cut a hole in my shirt. That piece was never meant to make it home, which is so fascinating to know that the universe is like, hey, hey.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's interesting because, I mean, we never know why things happen, right? But, like, for you to have that therapy, it was therapy you didn't know at the time, but like therapy for you, it was therapeutic.
Yes.
You know, you have this subconscious feeling and it's manifesting in your creativity, which is what we love about artistic therapy.
Yes.
But, you know, just like lyrics, but anyway, but yeah. And then it's like, you're not supposed to display this.
Mm-hmm.
It's not supposed to be this beautiful, like, finished product. Like, this was your feelings manifested.
Well, I think it's really interesting the fact
you're not putting it on a pedestal.
Right. No, I was obsessing over it.
Yeah.
I obsessed over the project and I obsessed over what was supposed to be instead of, and like, I still didn't, I didn't make that connection until, gosh, I might have already been in grad school. Like, I made a lot of connections in grad school.
Oh, well, and you're older, too. Like, yeah. During that time, when you're literally still a kid in undergrad, like...
Literally, I was 19.
I'm walking around like this.
No, I was still 18. I had had my 19th birthday because that semester, I was still 18. I turned 19. No. I turned 20.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I was like, that's not right. I turned 20, and then my grandmother passed in 2 days later, which was such a strange time. Like, it was just so turbulent.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I think looking back now, and like, I remember thinking about this project because it was one of my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
I would recreate it for the simple fact of the message that it does, but I don't have that emotional attachment to it anymore.
Right.
It's just the fact I like that idea because I feel like a lot of people, I might have named it Limbo, of that you don't know, where am I, do I go, do I stay, should I stay or should I go now? So yeah, no, I obsessed over it. And so that one, it received a lot of positive feedback, and also was kind of about the same time I decided to go into art therapy. That was the same semester that I got not approved, but I had to come up with a plan of what my career was going to be.
Right.
Because
you don't just do like art. That's what we explained last time. Like, you know, you don't just major. I mean, you can just major in like general music, but a lot of times it's very it's a specific thing, you know.
I think mine would be the most, which you would think of, oh, you're going to be an artist, because mine was studio art. And so...
Yeah, like having a studio or something.
Yeah, and like there was a few people that graduated and like they do make art and they show pieces and they have their studio and like they have their own... brand, essentially, like this, like it, the idea is if you looked at this painting, you know, when you're looking at a Picasso, mm-hmm. you know, you're looking at Van Gogh, like I almost said Vin Diesel.
You know, Vin Diesel,
you know. And so that's the idea with studio art, is that what is your mark and what is your eye and what is the stories that you're trying to tell? And I was way too immature in undergrad to even understand. Like, I just now, in the past couple years, when I've started doing those guitars for yep. the so my undergrad does and a guitarist art exhibition every year, and I've done it for the past, I think this is gonna be my fourth year.
I have one.
Yes, I gave her one.
It was my birthday present.
It was
last year.
Yes. And so, like, even then, like, I think I'm just now to that, I want to say maturity, but also it's almost more than maturity. It's, I had to come to terms with things in myself first.
I was going to say, it's about, like, finding yourself and your voice, mm-hmm. which I can also get into.
Yes. So yeah, I think I've talked enough about my undergrad experience. So... Yeah.
Your undergrad experience.
Yeah. I mean, finding your voice is probably a good segue, because in my undergrad, I definitely didn't have Susanna Brown's voice. And I think that was the biggest thing for me, because I don't have a doctorate. I'm not a professional. Like, I mean, I am a professional. I'm not a professor. And so whatever my professors had in mind for me, I guess, like, mm-hmm. whatever, I can respect that. And I did it. And I had a really difficult situation where I feel like I was not voiced correctly in my voice class, where my mm-hmm. range is. So my whole life, like, I've, you know, been involved in music. My whole family is music. And so I've, like, sung in church choir, and I've done theater, and I played drums, you know, in church band. But then I also did high school marching band, all the things, and I did choir and everything. But when I went to college, like, I sang alto throughout that whole time. And when I went to college, they were like, oh, you're a soprano. You sing all these really high notes, like, if you're a musician, like, they were having me sing, like, B-flat, A-flat, like, above, you know, above the staff, like, treble clef, whatever, like, up there.
Up there.
Above the staff, yeah.
Up there.
I hit a C one time in my life, a C6. Never again. Never, ever again. And what happened was, it hurt to sing.
Mm-hmm.
It's not supposed to do that. Newsflash. Singing is not supposed to hurt. And it sure did for me. And, like, I mean, I was learning. Like, there was definitely a habit that I, like, developed in my childhood and everything else. I mean, when you're trained professionally, then you're like, oh, these are things that I could be doing. Mm-hmm. This is how you sing. This is how you project. This is how you switch your ranges and everything else. But... yeah, they were having me sing way too high. And I mean, I just distinctly remember being in, like, college choir and being like, I love singing in college choir, or I love singing in choir because I can take breaks.
Wow.
Because it hurts so bad.
But you were an alto on the New Zealand trip.
Yeah, I would sing alto sometimes when they needed me.
Yeah, because I was a soprano. Mm-hmm. I think I was a soprano two.
Or probably.
One.
Or you could be one, probably.
Well, I was standing next to... I was second.
Yeah.
Because one of the girls that was on the trip with us, she was the first one, and then I was right next to her.
Right.
So I guess I was a soprano one.
Just yeah.
Kidding.
And I mean, I love singing alto. Like, I love singing the harmony parts, and I... was used to that. I mean, I'm up for whatever, right? And that's just my personality in general. I'm just like, okay, whatever. And yeah, no, like, it physically hurt. And so my vocal professor often, I just remember dreading going to vocal what's it called? Rehearsal, practice, whatever.
That thing.
Yeah. My voice class lessons. There we go. I was like, what is that called? So I distinctly remember going to my vocal lessons and dreading it because I knew my professor was going to say something about me being hoarse, mm-hmm. which was often in college, or me like not being able to sing the pieces, truthfully. Like I would practice so hard, and I was trying to force the sound out of my body that would not produce properly because, you know, and I was doing all the techniques that I thought I knew how to do. I just couldn't freaking sing that high, man, you know? And so now in my adult years, it's crazy because I just project so well now, and I could feel it. I could feel the resonation in my, you know, where you're supposed to feel it. In my skull, but...
In my skull.
Inside.
Inside. No, well, here's the thing. First of all, you can hit notes that I don't know that many women can.
And yeah, that's I can sing really low.
Yes. Yeah. Like, I remember when we did All Sing, and... Well, yeah, it was the year you were in charge, and you were like, you, I don't even remember what song we were singing, but I remember you started singing that low, almost bass. And I was like, we're gonna win.
It's we're like, gonna do it.
It's like,
oh my God. We had this inside joke in college that I could like sound like a man. Like I could bring it down, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And
my name was Sam.
Sam was that lower tone.
Sam.
Well, it's like, you know in Pitch Perfect where...
She has notes.
Yes, yes. She has it removed and she's like, oh, yes. I can't even.
Well, that's what I was scared of when I was in college. Like, yeah. I could have developed notes. In all honesty, like, you know, whatever it was just a difficult time. And I mean... Not just for me, but the entire music department, I would say. And like, you talk to any music ed major or anybody in the arts and they'll tell you like, it's not easy. It's not easy. There are lots of tireless nights. I remember the percussionist. I don't know why them specifically they would do this. They would literally bring cots and sleeping bags into the fine arts building and spend the night. Mind you, it's a locked up building on a campus. Like, and they would, and not even playing, like no cap or whatever. They, like, no cap. They would be doing homework all night or practicing.
Getting hip with the kiddos.
But yeah, they would... be like pulling all-nighters, yeah, and stuff. I pulled some all-nighters studying for like tests and everything because we did have tests. I mean, you know, like what some classes, like theory and history,
right.
And I failed some classes, dude. Yeah, like it was just so hard. And then, because like we had vocal juries. I mean, not just vocal, but every music person has juries where it's like the final project. And we had, music ed had 5 pieces that we have to sing in multiple different languages, mostly Italian, German, French, and English.
Oui, oui.
Mm-hmm. I don't know a word that I was saying, but I know how to pronounce them.
I mean, that's all that singing is. I don't, when we went to New Zealand, I just remember the Latin song so vividly. I don't remember a word, but I just remember...
Gervus. That's a good... Good Gervus.
Yeah, that was in... But yeah, I was just like...
Let's just break out in a choir piece.
I remember the New Zealand anthem.
I don't, and I'm sad. On top of all of that comes, like, performance anxiety. Hello? Hey, yo, I'm being graded on my self.
What? Yeah.
My talent, my... And, like, the thing is, for instrumentalists, like, that's one thing. Yes, you can play, and it's your hands, and whatever, but, like, the voice is mine. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, like...
How dare you have those vocal cords?
Ah! Yeah. How dare you have that vocal structure?
Yeah.
And a lot of times, like, oh my God, I remember being in this jury. And I had another student who was my accompanist. And we were friends. And I had this one piece, man. And I hated it. I hated it. And there was a part in the piece that hit right on my break, which is about an E flat at the time. I don't really know now because I don't sing super high anymore. But about that time, it was like an E flat. And it just like stayed on it for measures, okay? And I could feel like what would happen is my... throat would start tightening and constricting, and instead of me like projecting outward, I could just feel how tight it was. Mm-hmm. And then the air would constrict, and like I would try to breathe as much through my diaphragm as possible. But when you have that, it's like the feeling of a lump in your throat. Mm-hmm. So like if you're fixing to cry and you have a lump in your throat and you're trying to talk, that's very difficult. Now imagine you singing in a different language, and that's happening.
And being graded.
Yeah, and being graded. And also, I'm crying at this point, probably, because I ended up breaking, and I had to stop. And I stopped, and my accompanist kept going. And I just looked at him, and I was like, just keep going. And so I, you know, breezed past that section. Made it through the piece, and I was just immediately like, I'm so sorry, you know, like just cowering down, like it was so bad. And they were like, it's okay, like thank you so much, you know, everything else. And that's a grade.
Did I ever tell you I cried in my senior thesis?
Oh.
Because our professor is, so you got to pick professors to come in and like grade your senior thesis, which is, for us, the senior thesis, you put 15, I think it was 12 to 15 pieces together that had to have been made within the year, but they would prefer for most of them to happen that semester. And when I did my defense, I just blanked out. And I just remember they like were like, okay, like talk about one of your pieces. And I talked about the table. And I had tears already brimming, and I was like, because I knew the artist that I based it, like, there's this really famous artist that did a lot of table pieces, and he would glue everything down and then put it up on the wall. So that's
what I did. Piece you did.
Yeah, so I did a kitchen table.
That was my favorite.
Yes. You know I sold it.
Cool.
Yeah. It's in somebody's kitchen now. Basically, it was a kitchen table with food that I made on it, glued everything down, put it up on the wall. And, like, that was the idea behind it of defying gravity. Just you and I. That's what that piece was screaming. It fell. Anyways, and I was talking about it, and I just immediately, like, they were brimming. And I was, like, because I couldn't remember the artist's name off the top of my head. And I was, like, I promise I'm smart. I promise I can do this.
It gets hard, man. It's, like, you're under pressure. God, you're under pressure. And like, so I have to take my board exam next Wednesday.
Oh, that's exciting.
Is it? I'm so scared. Why are you taking it so
soon?
Because I wanted to take it before Bonnaroo. I found out immediately.
Have you been studying?
Yeah. I had to retain all of this stuff and learning. Music is not just like, it's not like one thing. And especially music therapy, which the performance side of it, like I still get nervous about, because we talked about this earlier and I was going to touch on it, about the passion part of it. Mm. But then like having an art career, an art field, is you're doing it for someone else. So there's the perfectionist side of it.
Absolutely.
Because it has to be perfect. And although that is not technically the case, in a lot of musicians' minds, a lot of artists' minds,
you're trained.
It has to be perfect. Because if you miss a note, like, or whatever, like, it's rough, right? You're like, oh, you messed up. Like,
no, it's like, yeah. Even though they don't know how it sounds, for me, I always struggled with, that's not how I thought it was going to look.
Right.
So now it's garbage. In reality, I actually learned that I just needed to walk away. So I would touch it for a week and then I'd come back and be like, oh, actually, I kind of like this.
Right.
Because we're not that we're taught to be our own self-critic, but I feel like there is probably a personality type that goes into.
There absolutely is.
Like.
There absolutely is.
This idea of, we want it to be a certain way, which is where we can get into like the brain and stuff, because I feel like this is going so
brain.
Yeah, so like when it comes to the arts, because there's actually what's considered in some states, you can do like a creative arts therapy. So basically, because
we just hired a dance therapist.
Ooh.
At my psych facility.
Yes. So basically, when it comes to like art therapy, music therapy, some facilities, some states, it just depends on the state, depends on licensure. We talked about that last time, but some states, they don't want to do individual, because you can do dance therapy, you can do drama therapy, you can do music therapy, you can do art therapy, you can do, I don't know what else, but those are like the four. I think those are the four like I can think off the top of my head. And so some states will do like a creative arts therapy. And so basically, when it all boils down to specifically, I can speak on the art side and you can speak on the music side, but when you are engaging in physically making art, something's really cool is happening in your brain. And this is why we felt like we needed to talk about this tonight, as much as like our careers were hard to get to this point, and like we did face a lot of criticism, and we faced a lot of anxiety and self-doubt. At the end of the day, two things. One, we are advocating for brains all around. We are advocating for just specialized interactions with each individual person we come into contact with, because you can't repeat. Even if I did the same intervention with 7 different kids, each one's going to take it a different way, and it's going to be specialized to them no matter what. I have no control over that because of how art works with the brain, and that's what's cool. So basically, when you're making art, we're going to pretend this is your brain. So you have your left and right hemisphere. And then you also have like a top and a bottom. So you have like your frontal cortex, your prefrontal cortex, I'm blanking out on it now.
Temporal, parietal.
Yes, temporal. I was like, what is this one? Yes, I always talk about the frontal cortex because I work a lot with trauma. Anyway, and then you have under it, which is your amygdala, your hippocampus, and all that. So you have your up and down and your side to side. Yes, and so when you engage in art, and correct me if I'm wrong, this might be the same with music. I'm not 100% sure. That's not my realm. But so art can bilaterally stimulate your brain. So you have multiple things firing off, going back and forth, all at the same time, and going up and down, up and down, up and down. So when you're engaging in art, even if it's just doodling, even if it's just, I felt like doing nothing and I'm just scribbling, and I'm being creative, your brain is learning to not just to communicate with itself in the sense of what do I want it to look like, but it's learning how to communicate with itself on an emotional level, on what you've witnessed in your life, coming to terms with things, like there's so much magic that happens when you are creating. And I think that when I went to grad school and we started learning all these fascinating things, it started piecing together the undergrad stuff, right? It just started piecing things together, and I was like, oh.
That's why we love master's degrees. Insane.
Yeah.
With music, it's the exact same way.
No.
I typed my literature review on basically treating trauma with therapy as opposed to, like, just taking medication or whatever.
Yeah, like pharmaceutical therapy.
Yeah. So, like, processing your trauma. And one of the biggest advocates for music therapists is the music, obviously. And so the way that music operates in the brain, I just talked about this with my patients, but with music and mood, like, when you hear music even passively, it lights up every compartment of the brain. And they've seen it in, like, MRIs and everything. And then even when you're, so that's even just listening, okay? Because you have your auditory, you have your language, you have even, like, visual with, like, the contour of the piece, like, just so much. Mm-hmm. And then you have the emotional side of it. It releases dopamine in the brain. I did an amazing paper on EDM music, which I want to publish these things, which is really cool. But
yeah,
I love EDM, and it definitely affects the brain in such a different way because of the actual structure of the song. Mm-hmm. It is structured to release dopamine in the brain even more so. Mm-hmm. And so because of that, like, the paper got way in depth about like treating trauma that may not be remembered, because when you have music, especially if music is associated with a trauma, there's actually a show called The Center. And they utilize that in, it's like the first season is all about, like, this crazy, like, uncovered thing that happens. Like, she commits this crime, and then everybody's like, why did she commit this crime? Because she's just a regular old person. And then she murders someone. Like, so,
Judas.
I know.
Judas.
So, anyway, but they use, it's music, because music was playing while the thing happened. And so, yeah, but it's because in your hippocampus, your memory is so embedded that even music at, like, time periods of trauma, or, like, hearing a song that could remind you of certain things, like, it just uncovers so much. And so, gosh, like, yeah, I could talk about this for hours.
Yeah, no, like, well, I was just thinking, because it just popped up, only because we're about to see this artist, but I distinctly, we're about to see this artist in a couple weeks.
Literally a week and a half.
But I was listening to their first album, and this album came out when my parents divorced. Mm. And I was listening, and I was like, okay, six-year-old Alex, like, I see you even.
You had to process some things.
Like,
girl. The music that I listened to in middle school, and I hear now, and, like, I don't really listen to a lot of screamo anymore. I think I enjoy and appreciate metal and alternative music and everything else because of the percussion aspect, because I'm a drummer. But man, I was listening to some dark stuff in middle school, because, like, that's what I needed to feel.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
that you needed to feel, period.
And I utilize music for that expression. Mm-hmm. Which also brings us into that of, like, our careers now. Mm-hmm. And I think both of us, like, you touched on it, like, with your master's, like, it literally tied it all together for me. Because mm-hmm. as I shared before, like, being in education, there was just something missing. There was a piece of the puzzle that I was like, yeah, like, I did all these things, I learned all of this, you know, I went into music, I have a passion for this, but, like, I don't understand why I'm not fitting in. Why do I not belong? And when I started learning about, like, how music can be used therapeutically, my whole world changed.
Yeah.
And now, like, even just, so this was my first week doing actual music therapy with people and getting paid for it and being
right,
a music therapist.
Like, having a career.
Yeah, this was the first week. And you guys, I can't even explain to you, like, people who are in very, very, very vulnerable positions in their life and coming into a psych facility, like, literally the worst day of their lives, literally. Mm-hmm. And then, like, seeing how, and what I thought was just, like, an easy session, right? But, like, being able for them to just, like, share music. I just did, like, this song sharing intervention, and we had a guest who put in the song. But we talked about music and mood, and I gave a prompt of, like, you know, choose a song that reflects, like, a sunny day, or choose a song that you would want to sing along to, like, your go-to karaoke song or something. And to see them just, like, interact with each other and building, like, because, like, how many times do you talk to somebody and you're like, well, what kind of music do you like? That's a big component of humanity, because, literally, you know, it's like,
everybody has their favorite artist.
Right. Or it's like, what's your favorite color? Like, everybody baseline has questions.
Yep. We have one. Our check-in was always, what color do you feel?
Yeah.
And let me tell you, in grad school, because that was like the go-to, like, even in class, they'd be like, okay, what color do you feel today? And I remember looking to one of my friends, and I looked at her, and we ended up sharing the same internship, or the same practicum.
Oh, cool.
We had the same pre-prac. Hi, Hannah. If you're listening at this time.
Yes.
And I looked at her and I said, you know, my color never changes, but the shades of it change. And she said, ooh. So we, like, would have conversation about that. I was like,
I don't know what that means, but that's cool.
Well, I always feel blue. Like, even now, I've started going more towards green.
That's blue. As blue.
And so, like, if I'm really excited, it might be more of, like, a turquoisey, like, super bright blue. If I'm, like, really just down and in my head, it might be more of a navy. If I'm just having, like, if I had to say my neutral, it would be, like, the color of my purse. Like, kind of like that robin egg blue. Like, that's probably one of my favorites. And, like, if I'm just having a good day, like, it's that. And I was like, I always feel a shade of blue. And in our practicum, they would do not community outreach, but they had the community come into the facility, and they did what was art as a part of healing. And so each year was a different theme, and the year that we were there, it was clocks. And one of the people that I worked with a lot, unknowingly, I don't know, the clock that he made, it was all different shades of blue.
Mm.
And I had worked with him the entire semester, and I looked at my friend and I was like, I'm buying it. So I have that clock in my house now.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't work. I didn't put batteries, because I didn't want the batteries to corrode or anything. And so it's just hanging up on my wall, and it's a sun, actually, because they would cut out shapes and then they would do the art on it. And it's a sun all in blue, in different shades of blue. Yeah. And I was like, is that my aura? Is that...
Probably.
Can you feel my energy right now?
Maybe. Yeah. You're just cool.
I'm just cool.
You're a cool girl.
A cool girl. So, looking back at just what our undergrad was, and just all the stressors and all the lessons that we've learned through being within different fine arts programs, I think one of the important things to point out is, even through all that struggle, even through the times that we were like, ha ha, peace out, ready to leave.
Yeah.
Just our existence in the programs is important, because I don't know, some fun facts out there for our people out in the world and the universe and Mars, I don't know.
Yeah.
So, specifically in fine arts, women have been barred from even existing in the same realm.
Oh, yeah.
And so, like, I think that's so interesting. So I just graduated with my second master's in art history. And so this was one of the things I wanted to eventually blend the two worlds of, like, art history and art therapy, how can each serve each other? Mm-hmm. It's really interesting. I have no answers right now, but one of the things I think is so fascinating is this idea that typically for visual art, you know, if you had to name a male artist right now, even earlier I was naming male artists.
Two men.
I can name, go on. I mean, I could list on both hands right now off the top of my head male artists mm-hmm. that are very well known. Like, they are just icons. And not that women aren't, but you right. kind of have to think a little bit harder unless you were exposed throughout your right. lifetime, right?
Frida Kahlo.
Yes, Frida Kahlo, Georgia yeah. O'Keeffe, Faith Ringgold. Like, I could...
Well, you just also talked a lot about that, too, in your paper.
I did just talk.
Your thesis.
So, yes, but this idea that women were physically barred. So there were art associations. There were art clubs. They were where the elite of the time, the elite artists would meet. And women physically could not even... Yeah. They were not allowed in.
Oh, yeah. Well, in opera... When opera first got developed in, like, Italy, you know, Germany, Italy, yeah. in Europe, and they were all men, mm-hmm. no matter the part.
Right. Well, that's Shakespeare.
Yes. They would literally sing soprano. And then you talk about castration, you know, Vienna Boy Choir, okay, they're singing soprano one. They're singing like high C's and D's and like, yeah. And they're men. Wow. Huh. They couldn't just get a woman, huh? Never even thought about that. Wow, crazy. but yeah, no. And that, like, I looked up statistics because I was like, I want to see. Because I knew it was bad. I didn't know it was this bad, though. The representation in music in 2021 of men versus women, it was 80% men in the music industry and 20% women. And the statistics go on like that. Crazy.
And that's not
like,
even...
Wow.
That study didn't even look at, like, LGBT
right?
representation or anything. It was just a...
Men, women.
Strict sex.
Yep. Like, gender roles. And then, like, that's not even breaking down of, like, instrument play. Because then you look at, like, bands. Do you know how many boys play flute? Mm. Right?
Yeah.
Do you know how many girls play percussion?
No, I think just the fact of, like, existing in the roles that we do is just a testament to just people that came before us and hopefully... people that come after and advocating and educating and especially in therapy and like the mental health realm, the more the representation, the better, because we are never going to know everybody's story 100%.
Right.
Even when we 100% relate with somebody, you still don't, like, your story is always yours to tell and mine's always to tell, even if we relate to each other on the same parts. And yeah. So, just, I always think representation matters, so.
Absolutely.
Period. So, I think that goes into this idea that, you know, what advice would you have told your 19, 20, 25-year-old self?
I was
going to
say now, and yeah. still, like... I think for me, especially with my most recent success, I would just say, like, keep going. Just keep going. Like, if you have a passion, express it. Mm-hmm. I literally said that earlier. Like, if you have it, flaunt it. You know what I mean? Even if it's just a little, even if you just have some kind of, like, inkling of, like, mm-hmm. hey, you know what? I kind of like doing music. Then do it. Try it. Why not? Don't get stuck in corporate world forever. You know, we're big advocates for creativity. And like, I don't know, even I was just talking to my coworker today and she's going to, she just got hired like over the summer to work at one of the amphitheaters
oh, that's
in
cool.
the city. Just like, Yeah, just like expose yourself to that. I don't know, try an open mic night. Go do karaoke. Just go do it, you know? And then if you want to pursue a career in that, do it. You know, if there's not a job out there that you think fits for you, and I mean that, like not you fitting into a job, but like the job fitting for you, create it.
Period.
Create it. Like literally the options are endless, especially now in this day and age. And like it's hard. Like we're, you know, still trying to get clients. We're obviously not business owners yet, but you know, we want to be there. And being able to share our love and passion with other people and how it can be therapeutic. So it's just like,
yeah, my grandmother always jokes saying that I'm going to have a patchwork quilt career. And I was like, absolutely, because life's too short.
Why not?
Yeah, life's too short not to do everything.
I mean, literally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, and I think my advice is along the same lines of, you know, you don't have to fit into a box. And I think we've touched a lot on that, but...
Right.
I mean, I did. I think a lot of my self-doubt and my anxiety was, one, I was unsure of myself at the time, but also I was trying to fit what I thought people wanted me to be and what I was supposed to be doing and, like, is this... And so there is this healthy version of breaking through that and, like, finding a sense of self and finding who you're comfortable with. And so, yeah, well, I think... You know, you went back to something. This will be my last piece of advice. Not persevere, but also go make a mess.
Oh, yes.
Yes. Go be messy. The world.
Dude.
So you're talking about, like, we support creativity 100%. And so a quick circle back to getting messy. And, like, I work with kids. My youngest client's 4. We make the biggest messes in my office.
Because you know what? Every time I've walked in there, it's pristine. Because messes can be clean.
Because messes can be cleaned up. And, like, especially if you are a parent out there, it is so important for development.
Yeah.
You can control a mess. Like, obviously, you can't have paint, like, flinging around your walls. I totally get that, right? And, like, put on some old clothes and get those fingerprints. So, fingerprints? Go get your fingerprints done. Go get
your child's fingerprints as soon as possible. Get them in the system while I can.
Go get the finger paints. Go get Play-Doh and clay and paintbrushes. Like, this is so good for development. And I see so many times that tired parents who have worked all day, who are now having to come home to their kid, who just want a break, they use the iPad. And, like, the iPad is great. It's a great invention. And also, our brains are screaming for unstructured creativity. Go dance with your kid. Go help them put on puppet shows or create a theater or paint or...
Yeah. Dude, I, like, dance videos on YouTube. Use the iPad. Yeah. And then do it with it. Like, there's so many people out there now. And so, oh my gosh, when I taught school, the Learning Station, shout out. Mm. I used it constantly.
Yes.
Because it's just like little dance and sing-alongs, right. You know?
Yeah.
You know how many people, I was going to say along those lines, how many people have told me I can't sing? And I told someone the other day, I was like, you know, everyone can sing.
Right.
You can.
You got vocal cords.
Yeah, you can do it. It's, you may not be matching the pitch, but who cares?
Who cares? You're not gonna be Whitney Houston.
No. And you know what? Perfectionism in art is such a dichotomy. Well, it's such a dichotomy. For what?
For what?
Who said you were gonna get paid millions? I'm not even paid millions, obviously, for my art.
Why do we have to be perfect at? Why do we have to be good at it to do it? Why? I mean, that's, I could list that with a lot of things. I know a lot of people, because I played sports growing up, I know a lot of people who didn't play the sport because they weren't good at it. And I was like, so go run, go frolic in the field, go just do it because it's fun and you're having a good time with people that you like.
Yep.
And so yeah, and like, you know, I think full circle moment of developing that thick skin and taking criticism, and like sometimes it feels too much, and I totally get that. And here we are, your disco queens, giving you permission to, if it makes you happy and it's not hurting anybody,
don't do it.
Don't hurt people. But if it makes you happy and you're not harming anyone or yourself, do it. And I don't mean, oh, my ears hurt because I sing. That's not what I mean, and you know that's not what I mean. So,
go sing karaoke.
Go sing karaoke.
It heals us all, man. Go get a couple drinks. Go get these espresso martinis.
Yes, go do karaoke. Go do chalk in your driveway, dude, and wash it off later.
I want to do a paint it with a twist.
Yeah.
Girl, the last time I did that, it was with a birthday party, actually. That's what she wanted to do. And we went and got these, like, paint by numbers from Etsy.
How cute.
Mine wasn't great, but like, I'm not a visual artist. I'm not going to say that I am, but it was fun. Who cares?
It's all about practice. Here's the main secret in the fine arts. It's all about practice.
This is true.
Like valid. You can develop, even if some people just are born with an eye, born with a talent, and you can develop that. You can learn in the art world. You can learn color theory. You can learn composition. You can learn how to make skin real and hair real and how things look in a realistic or versus an abstract. You can learn all these big fancy terms if you want to. But that's not at the core of what creativity is. Right. Creativity is just creating for your own enjoyment.
Yep.
So,
and everybody has it in their brain.
True.
You do.
Absolutely.
Because your brain reacts to creativity.
Absolutely. So on that note, I think we're done.
We've done it, man.
We did it. So on that note, make sure that you go follow, like, subscribe, whatever all the things are. We are.
Get your iPad.
Yeah, get your iPad. Listen to the podcast where you get your podcasts. Go follow us on YouTube. You get to see us just act of fools and all our bloopers on there.
Yes.
And during our summer, we're going to be posting some other videos of just us being silly, goofy, fun. Teehee. And then next episode, we have a fun surprise. So
I'm literally gonna cry.
It's so cool.
We're not revealing anything. You just have to stay tuned.
You just have to stay tuned. So you better show up next time. Okay, hold on. Here we come. All right.
Until next time, here we are. Stay groovy.
Bye.